York City. It's the Gary Knoll Show.
This will be an everlasting love. This will be the one I've waited for. This will be the first time anyone has loved me.
And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
He found me in time, and I'm so glad.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is an Empowerment Hour, the latest on health and healing, and how even small changes in your diet can have a major impact on your health. Also, and by the way, just for those tuning in for the first time, all of the information I share on this program is properly and objectively sourced. It all comes from mainstream medicine. It's a part of consensus. It's just not filtered down to the average person. But the science is there, and we report on it so you can make the changes. Then a commentary from Chris Hedges from TruthDig, Building the Iron Wall. Also today, I will have a commentary on why I'm bringing on some women who advocate for a more spiritual approach to feminist manifestos. And it's a time for renewal of feminism, but this time without all the hard polemics of male bashing or it's all about men. Instead, true feminism wants to see both men and women equally empowered, given equal opportunities, respected equally. So I'm going to share some of the feminists who I believe should be leading this movement, and yet you haven't heard a word from them. That's because those who gain power have held on to it, and if you don't agree with them, you yourself are attacked, no matter what your background as a feminist. So I'm going to share that. Then also today, I was watching the different news feeds. I frequently do this. I'll watch maybe five channels to see how they're covering a particular story. And all of them are this idea that Russia somehow interfered with our elections and that caused Hillary Clinton to lose. Simply not true. But if the former CIA director was laughing with Laura Ingraham, and I found nothing funny about it, about how we interfere in other people's politics, and yet they were laughing about it. And I'll play you that clip. Well, then he made it seem like the only time we've ever intervened in anyone else's election was in Italy post-World War II to prevent the communists from coming to power. A good thing, he said. You know, it was in our national interest. No, it wasn't. But I have, as you might expect, all of the actual, scientifically accurate, completely authenticated involvements that you may not have heard of, with deadly consequences in each case. So today, you're going to get a list of U.S. conspiracies and false flags. Now, why is this important today? Because just in the last week, Facebook and YouTube are now censoring anything that they consider a conspiracy story. So you won't have a chance to see the films, the documentaries, and that means virtually every important documentary would be erased, scrubbed. Not just mine, everyone's. If you took on big oil or gas hydrofracking or Gasland, Danny Schechter, a good friend of mine for decades, he took on the banking industry and the credit card industry, all that would be scrubbed. And then anyone who dares challenge the government or any agency of government, Mark Zuckerberg and the neo-fascist around him, would scrub it. You'd never know because it wouldn't be out there. And Google's behind it also. And, of course, all these people are doing business with the national security agencies. So if you doubt that we are in the midst right now of having our rights taken away, and then you wouldn't know where to go for quality information. You'd be stuck listening to the clowns over on MSNBC or Fox or other places. All mainstream media has been co-opted. That's another commentary I'll be doing later today. Then I want to show you the lighter side of a millennial. So we have the ultra-spiritual life episode of being a millennial, and, more seriously, a war on homelessness. And Jordan Peterson, why you have to fight postmodernism, the French philosophy. Now, most of you don't know a thing about postmodern French impact and Marxism on our current body politic. He gives a very insightful discussion of this. And he is probably one of the three top intellectual philosophers in Canada right now. He's very controversial. Some people like him, some people don't. But he has about 260 YouTube up there. I watched over 60 just to get a handle on him. And I do this before I bring someone's work onto the air. I want to see what are they about. And you have to go over the width and breadth of their material to find that. And he has some issues that we should be having open and honest discussion about. But right now, the corporate left is engaging in a new form of McCarthyism. And I found that strange because wasn't on our sister station WBAI and Pacifica that George Carlin ushered his, in that the whole concept of free speech challenge to the major media and corporate America by saying seven words. The station came within a hair of losing its license, but we won. And now, guess who doesn't want you to have free speech? The left and some specific people in Pacifica, including KPFA. Those hippies lost somewhere in a time warp of relevance out in Berkeley. We'll take that on also. Last week on two separate days, our computers were not able to keep up. We still broadcast, but over the internet, we were told by our major server that so many people tuned in, and I couldn't figure out where these people came from. So turns out it looks like right now that some PBS stations were playing a program I did because I forgot that it's the time they do fund drives, and I was in many of these stations their number one fundraiser with some important programming, including Planet Codes. That's probably where it came from, but we had a huge number of people coming on board. For example, just over the weekend, just from one of 17 different streaming sources, we had 9,000 people just downloading the archive from one server, and we've got almost 20 of them. So more and more people are paying attention to progressive messaging. Write these two numbers down because you never know when, boom, something crashes and then, unfortunately, you call Luann. Don't call her. I mean, she's up to her eyeballs getting work done, working 20 hours a day for this upcoming retreat, which is full, by the way. But I want you to write down the numbers so you can always go to the telephone, any telephone, hard telephone, cell phone, computer phone, and you can listen live. Write it down, 424-203-8046, 424-203-8046. But if you miss it, write down the archive number. Again, you can call anywhere in Canada and North America, and 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. Let's begin, and we always begin with the latest on health and healing. This study is from Ohio University, and it's about what happens when you're out of the holidays, the weather is changing, you want to get outside, you want to change your diet, there's more fresh fruits and vegetables. Well, according to this study, most people have unrealistic expectations of cutting out, let's say, all junk foods or all sugars. But the New England Journal of Medicine just published this detailed article of what happens when you do cut out, not everything, but some things, and you replace them with whole grains, that's your brown rice and quinoa and all of the millet and vegetables, fish, fruits, and nuts, and reduce your sugary beverages. They found that you, get this, you lower your risk of premature death by up to 17%. Wow, that's huge. Just with those small changes? And you don't have to do it all at once. Now, I deal with different people, and some will just right out say, I can't give up everything. I need my coffee. I need this. Okay, then let's decide what you will give up and give it up over a week, just that one item. So of all the things you're eating and drinking, we're going to take one item per week. Now that you can handle, and they say, I can handle that. And then the next week you give up another thing. Well, at the end of a year, you've completely changed your diet. I'd rather see people take a year and do it at their own pace without stress than trying to go cold turkey. Now, a lot of people want it. These are full adrenaline people. They say, bring it on, I'll do it. And they do. Both benefit. But according to High University, don't be disappointed if you can't do everything and do it all at once, because in the long term, everything that you do that changes a bad habit to a good habit benefits you. So that's good news. The Mediterranean diet, from a study at the Federal Rio Grande University in Brazil, that Mediterranean diet, which is exactly what we just talked about, lots of beans, lots of fruits and vegetables, ending a meal instead of cake and ice cream, ending it with fruit. More often than not, it's pears, grapes, apples, and that gets you really healthy, drinking lots of healthy water. They have artesian springs all over the Mediterranean. In fact, they have what they call water cleanses, and these are so common, no one ever talks about them. You just take a vacation, you go for a week or two, and you see everyone in these bathrobes, and they walk around, and they sit in the pools, and then all day long they're given glasses of water to drink. And then they can go into a spa and get massaged, or mud packs, or volcanic mud packs, which are the best. But that's all they're really doing. They're having light meals, very light, and drinking all day long. And why not? Consider this. The number one nutrient in your body is water. The number one weight of your body, 72%, is water. So wouldn't you think it's important in all your electrical charges, enter and exter, say electrical conductivity, for maintaining a potassium-sodium balance, maintaining your literally your mental balance. So if you're dehydrated, most people are, if you drink caffeine, you're certainly going to be dehydrated. Then you want to get the water in. Well, but also that diet, according to this study, would, quote, is linked to a higher muscle mass and bone density after menopause. Well, what do women and men with andropause, what do they lose? They lose their muscles. Their skin becomes very crepey around the neck and the chest and the under the arms and the knees. And then they begin to kind of wither away. They start losing the fatty pads into their cheeks. They get that hollow look. And then their jaws drop if they're overweight, and they get that very jowly look. So if you're on a Mediterranean diet, you lessen all that from happening. You stay more vital and strong and vigorous. And this was presented at the current Endocrine Society's 100th meeting in Chicago. So higher bone mass, you bet we need it. Higher muscle mass, oh my goodness, everybody over the age of 40 needs more muscle mass because you're really losing it. Postmenopausal women, you need it the most of anyone. So that's that. Something good to do. Now, the University of Eastern Finland had a study about the omega-6 fatty acids can protect against premature death. And while protecting against death, the omega-6 also keep your cardiovascular diseases at bay. Now, what am I talking about? I'm talking about, this was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, that linoleic, L-I-N-O-L-E-I-C, linoleic acid, is the most common polyunsaturated omega-6 fatty acid. Now, I talk about the omega-3s. They're phenomenal. But we also need the omega fatty acids from number 6. And we discovered that the higher the blood linoleic acid level, the smaller the risk of premature death. That's a big deal. So now two things will help prevent premature death that we've learned today. And there's no reason we can't do them both at the same time. All right? The Mediterranean diet, that's essential. The omega-6 fatty acids, that's essential. And, of course, small changes. So when you start adding up the small changes, 17%, the Mediterranean diet is 15%, and now you add in the omega-6 fatty acids, well, gee whiz, you know, you're almost 50% less likely to die versus if you would have not had that. Now, the omega-6 fatty acids, the polyunsaturated fatty acids, are known for their beneficial effects on blood cholesterol levels. And it's been speculated they may increase the risk of several chronic diseases by promoting low-grade inflammation, among other things. And the reasoning behind this speculation is that in the human body, linoleic acid is converted into arachidonic acid, also an omega-6 fatty acid, which in turn is converted into various inflammatory promoting compounds. However, this is the caveat. The omega-6 fatty acids also increase the production of anti-inflammatory compounds, and this is why it is challenging to determine the association of dietary factors with the risk of developing disease merely on focusing upon all omega-6 are bad. That's not true. Simply not true. And this study determined it on 2,480 men, and then they did a follow-up over about a 10-year period. So now where do you get these? All right, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, chia seeds, sesame seeds. That's where you get them. So there's two types of oils. You can buy the oils that are unfiltered, organic and cold-pressed. That's the oil you want. Once you filter the oil and they use high heat to do it, then you really have nothing in there except calories. Almost everything has been denatured. So the quality of the oil is what's important. And a study backs up all that I'm saying based upon an earlier population-based studies which have linked a higher intake of dietary linoleic acid and a higher blood linoleic acid level to a smaller risk of cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, without increasing the risk of cancer, for example. So now what you should do is have a balance. Omega-3 fatty acids, that's your important essential fatty acid for your heart and for cancer and for depression. And that is dominant. Then omega-6 also is important. You have to have a balance of both. From University of Calgary, exposure to even very low levels of BPA during pregnancy can lead to altered brain development. That's correct. New research in a laboratory provides an explanation of how exposure to a widely used chemical, bisphenol A, or BPA, during pregnancy, even at levels lower than the regulated safe human exposure levels, can lead to altered brain development and behavior later in life. And the research was presented at the Endocrine Society. By the way, if you're using bottled water from plastic bottles, paper receipts, can liners, food storage containers, all of those are known as endocrine-disrupting chemicals used in them. That's the BPA. It's a chemical that's added to these commercial products. That's why using glass, porcelain, stainless steel is always better. And or get yourself a water bottle that's BPA and chemical free, and therefore you can just keep filling that up when you exercise. So now we have an understanding of why people who are using these are having some challenges when they're born at learning and growing. And also from the University of California, San Francisco, scientists discovered how gene mutations reduce the need for sleep, and it's, well, let's put it this way. It's every overachiever's dream, a gene mutation that allows them to function normally with just 4 to 6 hours of sleep a night instead of the normal 8. And I'm going to bring a guest on to talk about this in depth because I see a positive and a negative from this, because a lot of people are doing everything humanly possible, including taking amphetamines, to work longer hours. And that's really not good. And what happens when you don't get a good night's sleep? And worst of all, what happens if you work overnight? If for more than 10 years you've worked night shift, you can pretty much count that you've knocked about 10 years off your life expectancy. So we need to pay attention to these issues. I'm going to do that in depth. And finally, from Tel Aviv University, which is in Israel, a high-energy breakfast. There's your smoothie with all your stuffs and all your berries and a scoop of nut butter and coconut oil and essential fatty acid vegan oil and all your compounding powders. You put all that in there. Boy, do you have a phenomenal meal. Well, according to this, it promotes weight loss, which a lot of people want. Quote, this study shows that in obese insulin-treated type 2 diabetes patients, a diet with three meals per day consisting of a big breakfast, average lunch, and small dinner had many rapid and positive effects compared to the traditional diet of six small meals evenly distributed throughout the day. Better weight loss, less hunger, and better diabetes control while using less insulin. So that's the latest. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you on board. We're coming back with a commentary. Please stay with us. I'd like to say thank you to all the stations carrying this program, all the individuals sharing with one another. We appreciate it. Senator Ted Cruz, down in Texas, along with 18 members of the House Representatives, 15 Republicans and 3 Democrats, has sent a letter to Attorney General Jeff Sessions demanding that the Qatari-run Al Jazeera television network register as a foreign agent under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. The letter was issued after Al Jazeera said it planned to air a documentary by a reporter who went undercover, and we're going to try to get that person on the air here and play part of the documentary for you. But it was to look into the Israeli lobby in the United States. If you think the NRA is powerful, it's chump change next to the Israeli lobby, because on the Israeli lobby, it's virtually unanimous. Whatever it wants, every member of the Senate and the House gives it, with rare, I mean one exception, maybe Ron Paul or someone else would say no to something. Now, the action by the senator and the House members follows the decision by the Justice Department to force RT America to register as a foreign agent and the imposition of algorithms by Facebook, Google, and Twitter that steer traffic away from this left-leaning, anti-war, and progressive website, including Truthdig. And it also follows December's abolition of net neutrality. Well, according to Chris Hedges, the letter asked the Justice Department to investigate, quote, reports that Al Jazeera infiltrated America nonprofit organizations. Really? Where's your proof? It says, quote, content produced by this network often directly undermines American interest with favorable coverage of U.S. State Department designated foreign terrorist organizations, including Hamas, Hezbollah, Palestine, Israel, Jihad, and al-Nusra and al-Qaeda branch in Syria. Quote, American citizens deserve to know whether the information and news media they consume is impartial, or if it is deceptive propaganda pushed by foreign nationals, the letter reads. Okay. Why am I sharing this with you? Why is this important? Because the ominous assault on the final stages of free press in the United States through an attempt to brand dissidents, independent journalists, including Chris Hedges, and critics of corporate power imperialism as agents of a foreign power has begun. It is happening. Until recently, this was a little-used regulation passed in 1938 to combat Nazi propaganda. And the journalist Max Blumenthal do a good job of addressing the issue in a clip that you can see on Real News Network. Those who challenge the dominant corporate narrative already struggle on the margins of the media landscape. The handful of independent websites and news outlets, including Truthdig, and a new foreign-run networks like Al Jazeera, RT America, on which Chris Hedges' show on Contact, are the few platforms left that examine corporate power and empire and the curtailment of our civil liberties and lethal police violence and the ecocide carried out by the fossil fuel and animal agricultural industries, as well as cover the war crimes committed by Israel and the United States military in the Middle East. Shutting down these venues would ensure that the critics who speak through them and oppress peoples, such as the Palestinians, have no voice left. So Chris is concerned, and he wants us all to be concerned, because he witnessed at times the victims of black propaganda campaigns when, quote, I was a foreign correspondent. False accusations are made anonymously and then amplified by a compliant press. The anonymous site Proper Not, replicating this tactic in 2016, published a blacklist of 199 sites that it alleged, with no evidence, quote, reliably echo Russian propaganda, end quote. More than half of those sites were far-right, conspiracy-driven ones. But about 20 of the sites were progressive, anti-war and left-wing. They included Alternet, Black Agenda Report, Democracy Now!, Naked Capitalism, Truth Dig, Truth Out, Counterpunch, and the World Socialist website. So Proper Not charged that these sites disseminated, quote, fake news on behalf of Russia, and the allegations became front-page news in the Washington Post in a story titled, Russia Propaganda Effort Helped Spread Fake News During the Election. Washington Post reporter Craig Timberg wrote in that article that the goal of a, quote, sophisticated Russian propaganda effort, according to the report, independent researchers who have tracked the operation, was punishing Democratic Hillary Clinton. Huh. To date, no one has exposed who operates Proper Not or who is behind the website. But the damage done by this black propaganda campaign and the subsequent announcement by Google and other organizations like Facebook that they had put in filters to elevate, quote, more authoritative content and, quote, to marginalize blatantly misleading, low-quality, offensive, or downright false information. Well, who's to decide what is misinformation? Well, I guess it's Jeff Bezos, the owner of the Washington Post and the founder and CEO of Amazon, has, like Google and some other major Silicon Valley corporations, close ties with the federal security and surveillance apparatus. He received $600 million contract from the CIA alone. Yeah. And the line separating technology-based entities like Google and Amazon and the government's security and surveillance apparatus are often non-existent. The goal of corporations like Google and Facebook is to profit, nothing more. Not the dissemination of truth. They could care less. And I invite Mark Zuckerberg and the owners of Google to come on this program and debate me. You'll be treated with respect. But then let's see what you're really about. Don't go on with those friendly shows that throw you softballs. Come on a show that can look at the issue honestly and fairly. But they won't. So what we have is we have them now censoring anyone who has anything to say in the films, the documentary, articles. So now some of the best and brightest minds in America who are truly independent and progressive, they and their sites are being filtered or censored. They already censored Mike Adams, the Health Rangers, and took some 7,000 of his video clips, audio clips, off. So that's how it's working. Because, what, they said that there are conspiracy theories out there and they don't want to allow anyone who's going to talk about a conspiracy? Okay, to my conspiracies, everything I'm about to tell you is fully documented. There is no doubting these things happened and who was involved. Let's start in February 1898, the detonation of the USS Maine, killing 266 men to launch war against Spain. That was America. In 1914, the bombing of the ocean liner, the Lusitania, was supposed a German U-boat. Later investigations revealed that the explosions happened inside the ship, which was transporting 6 million pounds of artillery shells on behalf of the Morgan Bank, but was blamed on the Germans. In 1932, U.S. Public Health Service conspired with the Tuskegee Institute to create a phony syphilis treatment program. The experiment, which involved lying to almost 400 African-American men who had developed syphilis but were not treated. They were simply observed over their lifetime to see what would happen. In 1933, Senator Prescott Bush, yes, of the Bush family, tried to create a military coup against President Franklin D. Roosevelt and install a fascist dictatorship in the United States. It had worked in Italy, and it was working in Germany. The plot included wealthy businessmen from Chase Manhattan, Goodyear Tire, Standard Oil of New Jersey, there's your Rockefellers, General Motors, and the DuPont family. Marine Corps Major General Smedley Butler was asked to lead the coup. Apparently, they did not do their background check before they approached him. Smedley Butler, the most decorated Marine in history, who was a vocal supporter of FDR, wore a wire and gathered data of this conspiracy and presented it to a congressional committee. But the powers that be behind the scene were so powerful that it was never taken any further, and no one involved in the conspiracy was charged. 1945, Operation Paperclip. We took 1,500 German scientists, technicians, and engineers who had been involved in their operations, including the chemicals used in their death camps, and we brought them out of there safely and gave them money and new lives in the United States. In 1948, Frank Wisner, who literally owned respected members of the New York Times, Newsweek, CBS, and other media outlets, was appointed director of the Office of Special Projects and told to create an organization that was capable of producing propaganda and engaging in economic warfare as part of the global war against Soviet communism. The CIA then evolved from that and took control of the office in the 1950s and maintained a secret campaign to influence the media around the world, and was heavily funded for the next 25 years. The Church Committee exposed the conspiracy in 1975 and calculated that misinformation would cost taxpayers about $265 million a year. In 1950s, Operation Ajax, CIA hired Iranians to pose as communists and staged bombings to create a coup against Mossadegh, the duly elected and progressive prime minister of or president of Iran. In 1957, British prime ministers admitted the UK intelligence worked for President Eisenhower to approve a plan to carry out attacks in Syria and blame Syrian government to effect regime change. Wow. 1957, and that's what they've been doing in Syria. Did it all over again. In the 1950s, Operation Gladio, Italian prime minister and the Italian judge admit the CIA, the Pentagon, and NATO carried out terror bombings in Italy to blame it on the communists. Civilians, women, and children were attacked and killed. And the BBC, by the way, did a special on that. But someone might pass this on to Laura Ingram. You can be a proto-fascist supporter and promote, you know, every war that ever could be in the world. I would bet you wouldn't argue against them. You're such a super hawk, and yet you're a very intelligent person, well-accomplished, good educational background, Supreme Court law clerk, and now media personality. And you're sitting there laughing with a former CIA director about this is what you should have told. You should have stopped me and says, by the way, are you talking about Operation Gladio? And isn't it true that men, women, and children were killed and that the United States supported bombing and blaming it on the communists? I don't think it's worth laughing about, Laura, but I forgot. You're at Fox. And then in the 1950s, the 70 MK Ultra, the CIA paid hospitals and prisons and universities for their participation in their silence of secrecy, dosing citizens with LSD and other drugs and experimenting in mind control. In 1973, the CIA director Richard Helms ordered that all documents related to MKUltra be destroyed. And while the conspiracy was eventually uncovered, nobody involved in any of these conspiracies was ever held accountable. No one. No one from the FBI, the CIA, the National Security State. In the 1960s, you have Operation COINTELPRO, illegal FBI projects to infiltrate domestic political organizations, to discredit and smear them. Wow. Then that's been going on because it's still going on today. They infiltrated every anti-Vietnam War group, every civil rights group, including Martin Luther King, and they got in touch with journalists. They also infiltrated the Black Panthers. And the methods used included psychological warfare, slander using forged fake documents, false reports to the media, harassment, wrongful imprisonment, and assassination. Congress later identified the false flag components of the operation. In the 1960s, the assassination of JFK and Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, that was all government complicit. No one's ever apologized. No one in the mainstream media has ever touched it. In 1960, Senator George Smathers suggested a false flag attack on Guatemala to give excuse to overthrow Castro. They considered it. In 1962, Operation Northwood, the U.S. government admits to Pentagon signing off on a plan to blow up American planes by switching airplanes and commit terrorist acts in Miami where people would die and then blame it on Cuba. In 1963, the Department of Defense writes a paper to promote attacks on Trinidad and Jamaica and falsely blame it on Cuba. In 1964, the National Security Agency admits it lied about the Gulf of Tonkin to make it look like North Vietnamese boats fired on U.S. ship. They did not. Now, let's just take that as one example. How many people were affected by that? How about 3.5 million died? 58,000 Americans died, but millions of Vietnamese died. 90% women and children, innocent civilians. No one's apologized. No one paid reparations. No one went out in there to take out all those mines that are still blowing up about 10,000 limbs a year. Plus, we left the deadly legacy of Agent Orange. Plus, we left all the Vietnam veterans because I helped Paul Rudishan. I did about 100 programs on helping the vets who were suffering from Agent Orange. And the government finally agreed to give them some small token amount of money. It was tiny. But not admit that they had done anything wrong. And then in 1973, CIA documents reveal the program to train foreign police and troops on how to conduct terrorist attacks, while Congress believed the funding was to train them on how to investigate terrorist attacks. In 1975, and it continued under Reagan until 1985, Operation Condor, the CIA and the U.S. programs to eradicate communists, union labor groups in Argentina, Chile, Bolivia, Uruguay, Paraguay, Brazil. Tens of thousands were murdered. How were they murdered? They were trained at the School of the Americas in the United States. And the CIA gave them weapons and the technical support, and that's how it was done. In 1975, the Church Committee started to investigate the CIA and FBI. If they had been operating within the law, the committee quickly discovered the CIA had a hitman business responsible for the assassinations of Mossadegh in Iran, Allende in Chile, as well as other leaders and revolutionaries in Central and South America. We had our own Murder Incorporated. It was all completely accepted by everyone involved in it in the U.S. government. Still going on today, except far more lethal. 1977, U.S. Congressional Committee admits that part of COINTELPRO, the FBI used provocateurs in the 1950s to the 70s to carry out violent acts, including murder, and falsely blame them on American political activists and groups. No one was ever held accountable. In 1990, testimony by Nerea, a 15-year-old girl, offered testimony to the U.S. Congress stating that she had witnessed Iraqi soldiers taking 15 Kuwaiti babies out of incubators and leaving them on the floor to die. This testimony aired on about 700 television stations throughout the United States. President George Bush, Sr., repeated the story at least 10 times. The events described by the girl were a complete lie, a total fabrication. The CIA requested that she received acting lessons before she testified. It was also discovered that she was the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador to the United States who worked with the Kuwaiti government to promote U.S. involvement in the Gulf War. And a big PR firm, I think it was Hill & Knowlton behind it. In 1994, the U.S. Army documents Special Forces Foreign Internal Defense Tactics and Procedures later updated in 2004, details how to employ terrorists using false flag operations to destabilize leftist regimes and movements in Latin America. In 1984, the release of CIA manual for Contra rebels on assassinating an ally in order to create a martyr for the cause. The manual was authenticated by the U.S. government and covered widely in the media. In 2000s, U.S. falsely blamed Iraq for its role in 9/11. 2001, U.S. anthrax attacks carried out by more than one U.S. government scientist. FBI senior officer was ordered to blame attacks on al-Qaeda. The government officials confirmed that Bush's White House tried to link it to the Iraq to justify the invasion. 2005, the Bush Department of Justice Attorney General John Hu suggests the U.S. use its CIA to create a false terrorist organization with its own websites, recruiting and training camps to claim credit for real terrorist strikes to confuse al-Qaeda ranks. In 2005, Seymour Hersh reveals Professor John Arikula of the Naval Postgraduate School designed a plan to create a pseudo-gang of terrorist groups to carry out terrorist attacks to undermine real terrorist networks. In 2008, the U.S. Army Special Operations Field Manual recommended the U.S. military use non-state groups, including paramilitary, oppositional parties, expatriates, transnational terrorist adversaries, and narco-illicit arms in illegal financial transactions for counterterrorism activities. In 2008, the U.S. soldiers come forward and admit that they are killing innocent Iraqis, that the and it's all about the body count. 2014, Ukraine security chief admits that the sniper attacks that started the U.S.-backed Ukrainian coup were carried out in order to frame others. In 2015, Seymour Hersh gets high-level U.S. government sources that the Turkish government carried out the chemical weapons attack in Syria, not Syria, but its allies could then blame Assad. And the British from 1946 to 48 bombed five ships carrying Jews fleeing the Holocaust to Palestine while setting up a fake group called Defenders of Arab Palestine to claim responsibility. Now, when was the last time you heard that? How about never? Now, remember, crimes against humanity do not have a statute of limitations. So why is it that five full shiploads of Jews fleeing the Holocaust to Palestine are killed and no one has been ever held accountable? And then you get into the Israelis, and my God, 1954, 84, 2005, and on and on and on. So I have 27 pages with over 300 absolutely provable happenings that were considered conspiratorial that later were proven to be completely accurate. So just remember, when they want to stop those of us who are investigative journalists from bringing forward in documentaries or films or broadcasts the truth, they win. And you won't realize how much you've lost until there is no such thing as a health food. There's only GMOs. There's no such thing as clean air because they've reduced or eliminated all air and water and soil purification or acts. You'll only know the media you're given. And unfortunately, and this is the bad part of this, I was thinking about this last night, the vast majority of people go right along with whatever they're told. We're going to go now right into a clip. Change the pace a little bit. Let us hear from Being a Millennial, the Ultra-Spiritual Life episode.
As a millennial, I'm part of the most advanced of humans that our species has ever seen. I love to go out and meet up with friends so we can all sit together looking down at our phones and message other friends who aren't there with us. I like my friends' online personas better than their in-person personas, so I don't associate with them in person anymore. And I can say with confidence, I have literally never held eye contact with anyone. How old am I? I'm 55. According to my birth date, I'm 33, but as a millennial, I don't identify with that age. And it's discrimination to think that I'm as old as my age. Now I'm 65. which means I should qualify to get Social Security checks every month now. When I order something off Amazon, it pisses me off that it takes until the next day for it to arrive. I mean, what kind of BS is that, that I have to wait almost 24 hours to get my new cold brew coffee maker? One time I started a petition against Amazon. Then I got tired of all the work it entailed before I sent it out to anyone. But still, when I was a kid, I always won the gold medal on the school's track team. I was only the 18th fastest kid, but I always won the gold medal. So did everyone else on the team, and the opposing team, because we were all the best. What that taught me is that hard work and determination are severe forms of abuse. I learned that I don't need to put effort into being great at something because I can just have people tell me that I'm great at that something instead. I'm great at everything I do. It also taught me that me and my family can file a lawsuit against anyone who doesn't give me a gold medal. I have 87 voicemails that I haven't checked, and I won't because I'm appalled when people call me without texting me first to see if they can call me. It's so inconsiderate. Sorry for the interruption. I just thought the world was probably wanting an update about how my diarrhea is doing. Someone spiked my lunch with gluten yesterday. What? I can't focus. It's a condition, which means it's not my fault. Because I'm a millennial, I care enough to deliberately come across like I don't care at all. That's how much I don't care. But a little reassurance that that's a good thing would be nice. In the professional world, whenever I've had a manager, I've tried to schedule meetings with them for every 45 minutes so that they can go over my work and reassure me that I'm doing a good job. When they point out how my work can be improved, I get upset. I mean, some have even had the nerve to say that I can't take criticism. I'm not going to listen to what those haters have to say. Haters going to hate. I just need to work for myself. I need the freedom to be in control of my schedule and to do things my way. And the fact that I think self-responsibility is a form of cruelty and that I know exactly how to not know how to follow through on anything means there's a high probability that I'll be successful working for myself. Awkward! I love using one-word retorts instead of stringing together an actual sentence comprised of coherent thoughts. I also feel like they help show my huge depth of character. My dating life is on point. I have no problem getting the courage to ask a woman out on Tinder. And there's no question that the best way to create a deep, heartfelt connection with someone is to connect to their online dating profile while I'm hiding behind a keyboard. As a millennial, I like to do a little microdosing and talk about the future of VR. I'm so engaged in this reality that I've basically conquered it all. I mean, I have seen almost every episode of every reality TV show, so there's nothing left for me to experience in this reality. So I need virtual reality to bring me my next conquest. I've also progressed my linguistic abilities to the point that now I mostly don't say actual words. I just say letters that stand for words. LOL, LMFAO, WTF, OMG, OMFG, OMMFG, OMMFGD. It's a form of spelling that doesn't require any knowledge in knowing how to read. And it suggests that I put so little effort into saying what I'm saying that I don't even say the words that I'm saying. I just say the letters that say the words that I'm not saying. It's like an intelligent form of illiteracy. I'd like to thank my helicopter parents for always keeping me in a safe nest free of any challenges. Because just like baby birds, you'll never find your wings if you're pushed out of the nest. Never leaving the nest of comfort, that's what gives you the strongest wings. As a millennial, I just want to make an impact on this world.
Okay, and that's certainly one perspective. Now for something more serious, we're going to listen to Professor Jordan Peterson. Again, it's not whether you agree or disagree with him. It's, are you able to get any insight you didn't have before so you can reframe the arguments that we're addressing? This is on why you have to fight postmodernism.
I want to recommend a book first to everyone here. It's called Explaining Postmodernism, and it's by a gentleman named Stephen Hicks. And you need to understand postmodernism because that's what you're up against, and you're up against it far more than you know or think. and it's a much more well-developed and pervasive, pernicious, nihilistic, intellectually attractive doctrine than has yet come to public realization. It absolutely dominates the humanities and increasingly the social sciences in the universities. And what's happening, you see, someone once said, who unfortunately I can't remember, it might have been Friedrich Nietzsche, said that everybody is the unconscious exponent of a dead philosopher. And fortunately, the postmodern philosophers, most of them are dead, so that's a good thing. But that doesn't mean that their words aren't continually being spoken by people who are following in their wake, let's say. And it's not like any given person is absolutely possessed, say, by the spirit of postmodernism, because often they're not educated enough to know all the details about what it is that has them in their grip. But if you get 20 of them together, and they're all 5% influenced by the postmodernist ethos, you basically have the spirit of the mob that's a mouthpiece for that particular philosophical doctrine. And if you understand the doctrine, then you understand why things are progressing the way that they're progressing. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about the doctrine, because it's not optional to understand this. It's absolutely crucial to understand this. You can't underestimate the power of ideas and also the power of words, of course, because ideas are expressed in words. But you see, the postmodernists completely reject the structure of Western civilization. And I mean completely. So I can give you an example in one term. Jacques Derrida, who's head trickster for the postmodernist movement, regarded Western culture, let's call it the patriarchy, as phallogocentric. Okay, so phallo comes from phallus, P-H-A-L-L-O. And so that's the insistence that what you see in Western culture is the consequence of a male-dominated, oppressive, self-serving society. And we might say, well, you know, societies do tend to be self-serving, and people in power do tend to act in their best interests, but a tendency is not an absolute, and that's one of the things that needs to be considered continually. There are no shortage of flaws in the manner in which we've structured our society. And compared to any hypothetical utopia, it's an absolutely dismal wreck. But compared to the rest of the world and the plight of other societies throughout the history of mankind, we're doing pretty damn well, and we should be happy to be living in the society that we're living in. So the first thing that you might want to note about postmodernism is that it doesn't have a shred of gratitude. And there's something pathologically wrong with a person who doesn't have any gratitude, especially when they live in what so far is the best of all possible worlds. And so if you're not grateful, you're driven by resentment. And resentment is about the worst emotion that you can possibly experience apart from arrogance. Resentment, arrogance, and deceit. There's an evil triad for you. And if you're bitter about everything that's happening around you, despite the fact that you're bathed in wealth, then there's something absolutely wrong with you. You know, the black community in the United States is the 18th wealthiest nation on the planet. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't such a thing as relative poverty. And relative poverty matters. It's an important political economic issue, and it's very, very difficult to deal with. But absolute wealth matters too, and Western societies have been absolutely remarkable in their ability to generate and distribute wealth, as you can tell by just looking around and taking a brief bit of consideration for the absolute miracle that even a building like this represents. So you have to educate yourself about postmodernism. Okay, so here's what the postmodernists believe. They don't believe in the individual. That's the logos part. Western culture is phallogocentric. Logo is logos. That's partly the Christian word, but it's also partly the root word of logic, okay? They don't believe in logic. They believe that logic is part of the process by which the patriarchal institutions of the West continue to dominate and to justify their dominance. They don't believe in dialogue. The root word of dialogue is logos again. They don't believe that people of goodwill can come to consensus through the exchange of ideas. They believe that that notion is part of the philosophical substructure and practices of the dominant culture. So the reason they don't let people who they don't agree with speak on campus is because they don't agree with letting people speak. You see, it's not part of the ethos. Okay, so what else do they believe and not believe? They believe that since you don't have an individual identity, your fundamental identity is group fostered. And that means that you're basically an exemplar of your race, hence white privilege, or you're an exemplar of your gender or your sex or your ethnicity, or you're an exemplar of however you can be classified so that you are placed in the position of victim against the oppressor, because that's the game. And it's a post-Marxist sleight of hand, right? The old Marxist notion was that the world was a battleground between the bourgeoisie and the proletariat, and that failed to have any philosophical or ethical standing, that argument, after the working class actually saw its standard of living massively elevated as a consequence of Western corporate democracy, Western free enterprise democracy, and also as a consequence of the revelations of everything terrible that had happened in every bloody country that ever dared to make equity and the Marxist communist dogma part of their fundamental structure, right? And nothing but murderousness and oppression. And so by the 1970s, it was evident that that game was up. The postmodernist Marxist just barely, basically pulled a sleight of hand and said, okay, if it's not the poor against the rich, it's the oppressed against the oppressor. We'll just redivide the subpopulations in ways that make our bloody philosophy continue in its movement forward, and that's where we're at now. And so for the postmodernists, the world is a Hobbesian battleground of identity groups. They do not communicate with one another because they can't. All there is a struggle for power. And if you're in the predator group, which means you're an oppressor, then you better look out, because you're not exactly welcome. Not exactly welcome. And neither are your ideas. So that's what you're up against. I would say it's time for conservatives to stop apologizing for being conservatives. You know, and... You don't apologize.
What will we be doing on an upcoming program? I'm inviting him on to discuss these issues, because I believe that between his views and the identity politics, there's this great divide. But let's look for the meaning, let's look for the truth, wherever it is, in part or whole, more often not in part, pieces of the puzzle that we put together with the ultimate objective that we can live in harmony, and where if you have an idea, people at least listen to the idea, what you have to say. They can accept or reject it. But right now, there are groups that don't want to hear anything you have to say. They'll do everything they can to suppress your freedom of speech and your ideas. We should never be afraid of an idea. We can look at it and see whether or not it helps society or hinders it, causes us to become healthier or sicker. Because it is in who controls the message and what is their motive that most Americans are influenced. That's why you have a nation of obesity, because they watch all those commercials and everybody wanted to have, you know, their Sunday with their pizzas and their beers and hang out. Everybody wanted to buy a car that was advertised on television. You rarely see people buying a car that's not advertised. Same way with almost everything else. We have been so indoctrinated that we have been cut and diced into 1,000 pieces by marketing people. And you get caught up into some of these identities, you don't pull back and look at the larger picture. We will be pulling back and looking at the larger picture, inviting different people to share their points of view, which we can then deconstruct and see, does it make sense or not? I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.